What you are listening to is real. The participants are not actors. They are real people with a case pending in podcast court. Hello, I'm producer Peter, and welcome to Cage Match, colon, a roundabout way of meeting Nicolas Cage, colon, podcast court. Today's case is between a man with a penchant for robbing out-of-the-way convenience stores and a man who really should be carrying around more than $1.
Oh, God.
I like crunchy bits.
That's fair.
I also like I like a good Nestle Crunch.
Dude, Butterfinger Crunch, when those were out, not a thing anymore. Amazing.
The new Butterfinger recipe is actually really good.
There's a new recipe?
Yeah.
What did they change?
They just, I don't know, made it a little
better.
Took
out the cocaine.
It's not as dry. It feels good.
Does it not stick to your teeth as bad? Because that's what I hate.
It still does a little bit, but not like as much. So it doesn't feel like it's been sitting in a warehouse for half a year.
I kind of liked that about it.
Yeah.
Sort of comes with the territory.
To each their own. I really like a Payday, which is a...
We call them salted nut rolls in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Different brand.
Different brand. That's like the Kmart of the Payday.
No.
Variety.
No, it's just a local brand.
I also like a Charleston
when
chew.
When you have to describe something strictly by the ingredients, it's salt and nuts and rolled. That is the Kmart variety. It's like our branding.
Oh my God. Did you guys have Pomida?
No.
What?
It's like off-brand Kmart.
Oh no, definitely oh, no. not.
It's even more off-brand.
I thought this was Target. Just like special pimento.
You guys ever think about doing ASMR?
No.
I mean, I think about whacking off on a microphone sometimes, but
I am going to cut all of this. I mean, legitimately.
You can't cut what's already been cut.
No, we just have to reference this later.
Yeah, exactly. Then I do have to put it in because it was funny.
I've seen this problem on Whose Line Is It Anyway.
You do have to reference it later, but actually be funny about it. Because if it's not, doesn't matter.
Correct, yeah.
Double cut. I know how Cage Match works.
Because you're in charge of it?
Yes.
Why did we give you
kind of define how it works, really.
Kind of, yeah.
I just try to keep all the racist things underneath somebody else's really good jokes.
Yeah, it's good, right?
Yeah.
You say them backwards?
Yeah.
Smart.
So if they play the podcast backwards, they hear all the racist stuff?
Yep.
Yeah. And it's just always like...
Hell talk and then racism.
My name is Peter and I hate the...
Wow, you didn't go for it.
Yeah,
that was your chance. You could have said it.
You know what? It would have been incredibly unbelievable no matter what I had said.
Fair enough.
There's probably enough recorded audio of you guys that you can make AI voices.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we have, upwards of like 90 hours of content.
Oh, yeah.
You want a baggie of pills?
I mean, they just look like ibuprofen and Advil.
That's all they are.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a lot of fun.
But your joints will feel good.
My joints are just fine as they are.
All right, fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew what you were talking about.
My weeds.
I got it.
I will grind those up and boof them, though.
It's the only way to take ibuprofen.
Yeah. Oh, you know, so I was getting in the car the other day with Josie, and she goes to sit down, and I had to move some stuff off the seat. I had like an Afrin and some stuff like that on there. And she was like, oh, I don't want to sit on your nasal spray. And that got me thinking, like, what's going to happen if you like spray a bunch of Afrin up your butthole? Like, does it open it up? Like, are you going to get
Afrin's a decongest. Like, they gave me that after my nose surgery, and they were like, under no circumstances should you use this for longer than 3 days.
Yeah. Because it's got like some shit that's
you get
like,
addicted to it.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, I'm aware. But like, what happens if you put it in your butt?
Yeah, it just opens it wide.
But it'll like,
but you don't do
dry
it.
Dry it up, I think.
You think it'll dry it up?
Yeah,
probably.
They make Afrin now that like is good for moistness.
Oh,
yeah. John's got something for that.
We'll try it
for moistness.
Yeah,
Not oh, yeah. You could boof one of these mints.
All right. So first I'm going to spray a bunch of Afrin up my butt.
Then you take one of the peppercorn mints.
Then I'm going to put your like Szechuan peppercorns up my butt.
Yeah. And then we just let them battle it out and see what happens.
Yeah. And then when things get too boring, I'm going to take some loosely ground Advil and ibuprofen and kind of rim it around in there.
You know, if you're going to do this, do it after I move out, please. Because I know you're going to do it here.
Well, yeah. No, you got plenty of boxes. I'll just lay some cardboard down and Peter and, Peter and John can just kind of funnel the pills into me. It's like a general, like it's a usual Sunday.
It's like loading a Pez dispenser.
But backwards.
Gross.
It's like one of those cheap novelty like candy dispensers where it's poop coming out and you bend the thing over.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've never seen this.
Oh, it's like so popular during like Christmas, like, oh, the reindeer poops. And it's like, no, it's just root beer flavored jelly bean or some shit.
Cowards.
Could have been poop. Didn't Cards Against Humanity send like poop to people?
Yeah, you could have done that. Yeah.
Speaking of things that could happen to you, welcome to Cage Match, a roundabout way of meeting Nicolas Cage. I'm your guest, John.
Nice. Yeah, I wasn't going to do it this time.
That movie's been eliminated for so long.
Wait a minute. You guys are replacing me since I'm moving, aren't you? I knew it.
I just saw an opportunity for a segue. I had to take it.
I was hoping that would happen. I'm your host, Sean.
And my name is Nick.
Hi, I'm Peter. I'm also here.
Yeah, we exist in the general space of this.
It's amazing that we've gotten so bad at that.
We've just gotten comfortable with each other.
Yeah, that's true. We just don't try anymore. So thanks.
Kind of like a marriage.
Yeah. So Raising Arizona, 1987.
Yeah.
Coen Brothers.
I did not realize this movie was that old.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I was thinking, I was talking to a friend of mine when I was watching this, and it was, I think it's like 1991. Mm-hmm. Looked it up as, oh shit, okay, yeah.
Yeah, this also, one goes back. It's
It really does.
I also did not realize Coen Brothers' second movie after one that nobody's ever seen.
Blood Simple. Is that what it is?
Something like that.
You haven't seen Blood Simple?
I've seen it once. Have you seen it?
No.
I literally never heard of it until today.
Yeah.
So this is Nick and I fourth time watching it.
Yeah,
third round of it.
This is the third time that we've watched it for the bracket.
For the bracket. I'm doing mostly single rewatches for the second time or third time around.
Yeah. At this point, I think that's fair to just stay fresh on it.
Yeah. Still slaps.
It is still so good. I love. Well, John, why don't you run us down on this movie real
quick? Apparently, you're the host now. You did the work.
I was really afraid that I knew that you guys were going to ask me to narrate the plot of this movie, and there is so much plot.
Give me a scene by scene breakdown. We haven't done one of those in a long time.
We need it in 2 minutes or less.
All right. So this guy, Hi McDonough, they reveal what the H stands for, but I forget.
Herbert.
Yeah. Thank you. So he likes to rob convenience stores and keeps going to jail. And the lady that's taking his picture at jail every time over the course of years, this is mind blowing to me, is always the same lady.
Edwina.
Yep. Goes by Ed. They, for some fucking reason, fall in love. He gets out, proposes to her. She leaves. I don't remember. Something. They decide they want a kid. But it turns out that she's barren.
Because he can find no purchase.
But this rich, famous dude just had it. Does the wife ever like appear in this?
Yeah,
like,
she sits next to him in their chair.
She checks on the baby.
She has one line.
Weird.
She has
kind
a cool
good scream.
The cool shot where they did everything in reverse from her mouth.
Oh, yeah.
Then played it backwards. Yeah, that was cool.
Anywho, famous guy has 5 kids, right? Quince?
Mm-hmm.
I can remember if it was 4 or 5.
The Arizona Quince.
It's more than one man.
His name is Nathan Arizona. His kids are named a bunch of Ollies and then Nathan Jr.
Yeah, it's like Larry, Gary, Jerry, Barry, and Nathan Jr.
And Nathan Jr.
The good one.
So we know which one's the favorite.
He's the best baby.
You know, if they would have just stole Ollie.
I love him so much.
You know, if they would have just taken Ollie, they probably would have gotten away with it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, nobody wants an Ollie.
So they steal the kid. He puts out a bounty. So this random fucking bounty hunter shows up and also wants the kid. And also two criminal buddies of High's show up and also decide they want the kid for said reward. And basically the kid's a big old MacGuffin. They all fight over it at the very end. And High and Ed come up with it, but they return it to Nathan, Arizona.
Well done.
You went 10 seconds over.
Fuck you. Still pretty good.
we did interrupt you.
We talked about the screaming for a minute. So yeah, you got you hit the mark.
I'm actually really proud of myself for that because I'm fucking terrible at summarizing shit.
That was good. I mean, that is accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is a terrific series of events in this. Did you have a favorite scene or what about this movie really?
What does really it for you?
Speaks to you.
I mean, it's absolutely fucking bonkers for one. And there's so much plot. So like I was rewatching it earlier and I knew the sequence of the movie and I had a moment where I was like, holy fuck, there's still 40 minutes of this movie left. And it's only been, I don't know what.
It's a 90 50? Minute movie.
Yeah. It's a tight 90. It's actually more like a tight 100, I think, but tight 90.
That's starting to get loose.
Footloose, 94 footloose. Minutes.
Thank you.
So you were both right.
Yes. Yeah. Average. Thanks, Peter. Between the two of us, we're average.
That's a very nice way of saying that you were wrong. Oh, so you were both right.
But in general, I appreciate the zaniness. When I was watching it, I turned to the person I was watching it with and said, this movie or the events of this movie are so incredibly improbable. And that's what I love about it, I think, is it's just like, and this is kind of all Coen Brothers movies. It's like, you know, you set up a premise and then something very improbable happens, sends off a bunch of shit. And then, you know, depending on the movie, more. And then this, all of it.
Mm-hmm. There isn't a wasted moment of this film.
No.
Every scene fucking matters. It is tight. It is executed very well. And at a certain point, it just becomes a live action cartoon and it doesn't stop until the very end.
Yeah, because even this stuff that like doesn't really matter, like his boss, his foreman Glenn, and his wife Frances McDormand, like that stuff doesn't matter in really any capacity, but it's fucking funny. And it's great.
The cuts of him at work with that old guy, yeah, just right. Telling stories,
telling the story about finding a head.
Oh man, the guy. So the old guy at the bank and the old guy at the gas station convenience store or whatever were my fucking favorite.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely necessary.
I know we just did Wild at Heart, but every time I watch both that or this, I know both movies end with a bank robbery and I can never remember outside of like who's there. Like the series of events I kind of always forget. I'm like, which one does someone get their hand shot off? Right.
Yeah, and they're both like a seat hazing, bank sort of thing.
Hazing banks for sure.
Freeze and get on the ground. Which one?
Which is it? If and we get on the ground, we can't be freezing.
John Goodman in this just makes this movie for me. Just him, the amount of scenes that it's just him screaming, yeah. And it's great.
He has such a primal scream in it, too. Like when he climbs out of the shithole. It's like you just escaped from prison. It's in the background. But you know what? You deserve this.
Or just like two times they leave the baby.
When they're going back for the baby the first time and he's just screaming and punching the roof of the car. Yep. Or God. When the ink.
Oh, the blue ink.
The blue ink pack goes off. All of it's so good.
It is fantastic. I think on this third watch, I finally was just able to like completely turn my brain off and just enjoy every aspect of this movie. The thing that kills me about it is the writing is so good.
Mm-hmm. It's tight.
Everything about it is phrased in such a weird, bizarro way. It's like nobody talks like this. And mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's so funny.
It's believable. Like you're right. Nobody talks like that. But also it's somehow executed in such a way that it's like, not jarring.
That's exactly it.
I don't know.
Well, like it doesn't feel weird to hear it, even though you're like, no one says that.
Right. You're mm-hmm. comfortable with the right. way they talk.
People always talk about like, oh, I mean, I think this is well past this now with like his last few movies, but like people would always talk about how Tarantino does such naturalistic dialogue. But like the Coen brothers do it so much better because it's actually focused and still feels like it's a real conversation.
How do you all feel about the West Wing guy?
Sorkin.
Yeah, how do you feel about his dialogue? West Wing.
A lot of walking
network.
And talking. There's a lot of like back and forth.
It's like Gilmore Girls for middle-aged dudes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I feel fine with it. I feel like it is a good representation of like real patter in a workplace, but it's also sort of like too on it or something.
I've heard it described as not how real people talk, but how we wish they talked.
That's a good way to put it. Whatever. Yeah. Yeah. And I want everyone to talk like they're from Raising Arizona or Fargo, either one.
I want everybody I've to been talk to that like
place.
They're from Wild at Heart.
Oh, but that's good too. Yeah.
That's just so affected. But Raising Arizona would be a solid choice.
High and Sailor seem like they could have been separated at birth.
Or met in prison and talked about or crawdads and eating sand.
There's a real dangerous intersection for those two worlds.
Yeah. Yeah. John, had you seen this before?
Yeah, so I saw it like a while ago. I'm gonna say like 15 years ago, something like that, and remember it being good, remember it being funny, zany, whatever, but I couldn't remember any specifics about it. And so when y'all started doing the podcast, I rewatched it and remembered how amazing it was. And then I think it was several months ago now, but when you talked about me coming on here for this, I rewatched it again. And then I've watched it twice in the last 2 days. So
nice. You've watched it now technically more than we have. Well, rewatches, but yeah, impressive.
Thanks. I understood the assignment.
More than we do.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're in charge of this show. All we have to do is just know slightly more than the person coming in.
Or at least be good at pretending when someone's like, did you guys know about this? And we're like,
yeah.
Oh, the best part is just asking questions like, so why do you think this is the movie that needs to go forward?
Because it's the definition of a Nick Cage movie. It's absolutely fucking zany. He's amazing in it. He's got this crazy character that he's the best at. Unless you want to go really serious, I would say like this and Pig are like the complete opposites and really good examples of the full spectrum of Nick Cage. Which one's better? I think Raising Arizona, because it's a little bit more representative of his full career.
Oh, but save yourself a little bit. It's not going up against Pig today.
Well, not yet.
Yeah, it's up to you guys.
I agree.
Yeah, that is
also fuck you for asking me that question.
technically, he wasn't asking you the question. He was just giving an example of what we can ask as podcast hosts.
Yeah.
But it's what we were going to ask you. Yeah. So why do you think this needs to move forward this week?
We also have like 15 to 20 minutes more of time. So like, we spent 10 minutes talking about nothing. Yeah. So
we need to make a joke about that. So Peter has to put it in.
What were we talking about? I don't even remember what we're talking about anymore.
Just say that's a nice callback.
Oh, good. I'll definitely put that in.
Then there's a very sincere apology in our future.
Has a podcast ever done a clip show?
I listen to This Week in Tech once a week, or I used to. And at the end of the year, they do a clip show.
Oh, it sounds like so much fucking work.
For you?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be one thing if I were like actually tucking good things aside every time I edit an episode, but
you'd think ahead, yeah.
Yeah, no, I didn't bucket any of those.
All right,
you'd have to go back
and re-listen. What's your favorite podcast memory?
My favorite podcast memory, talking to the AC boys about absolutely everything Atlantic City related, but never talking about the film and then moving on.
So now you need to put 20 minutes of that right here.
Perfect. Yeah. Done.
John, what's your favorite podcast memory?
One time I was listening to Stuff You Should Know.
Fuck you.
I mean, it was really holding out a lot of hope to think that
he would actually give us one of ours.
My favorite from this podcast is one of those little after whatever stings. And Nick said, do you think Sting makes his sexual partners sign non-completes?
I love that one. That's so good.
I was at work at my desk and I started laughing and I got a couple of looks.
John, do you have a favorite?
You're not going to ask me?
Sean, do you have a favorite memory from this podcast?
When you lost your shit.
Oh, me too. That's my favorite memory. What is
it? The mom and dad episode. Yeah. And
mom and dad and next.
Just you.
Why is Columbo in this?
The thing is, like, it's great on the podcast, but I very much remember just, I've never seen you laugh like that before.
It was everything leading up to that. It was just tickling me so much. And then that was, whatever reason, the fucking thing that kicked me over the edge.
I've been chasing that high ever since.
Oh, yeah. The good days.
Yeah. We don't record like that anymore.
Nope. No fun anymore. No. Never. Did we do favorite scene?
No, we haven't really hit like specific scenes.
Let's
or
do the round robin favorite scene. And John, you can kick it off if you want.
No, I'd rather not.
I will.
Thanks for coming on the podcast and talking about this fucking movie, you asshole.
Hey, shut up. You gave me the, like, why should this be the best Nick Cage question?
Yeah, it's perfect.
Again, technically, he didn't.
Right. It was a prompt. Okay, my favorite scene this time when I was watching it is when I think they've come back from stealing the Huggies, and Evel and what the fuck is John Goodman's character's name?
Dale.
Dale and Evel are sitting on the couch, and around them, just beautifully arranged, are like 22 Budweisers.
Yeah.
And they're just having this conversation about, like, High being sort of a cuck and, you know, not having the balls to be the man in the situation. And I kept laughing about it because there's like one crushed up there and it looks really normal, but then there's like one inside of a cup somewhere and there's another one over here. It's just everywhere.
The set dresser for that scene just did a great job of like individual placement, like what makes this can fun.
Yep. And then Goodman goes to the fridge and gets three more.
The scene that got me this time, and I always love this line, but full disclosure, I was like watching this in the background while I was packing. So just the scene that made me just stop what I was doing and just get a good chuckle in is just sometimes I'd find myself driving by convenience stores, weren't even on the way home.
I'm always going to love the Huggies theft scene. Just because it gets so crazy, like the dogs get involved, everybody's got a gun. It is a terrific, just farcical moment.
Also just, I mean, in terms of his crime spree and all the scenes where he's up for parole.
Those are good.
Yeah, it's like, don't tell us what we want to hear. Tell us the truth. Well, I think the truth is what it's like. Well, then I am going to tell you what you want to hear. Well, what did I tell you about telling us what we want to hear?
My favorite scenes are the ones with the old guys. Both of those guys are fucking masterful. They're so dry. Everything they said is just hilarious because of the way they say it and so unexpected.
Yep. I like that.
Yeah. The bank robbery is terrific. Mm-hmm. So, but where are the tellers? We're down here. We're on the ground like you told us.
I also I love their reasoning. They don't want to leave the baby in the car because if they die robbing the bank, then someone won't find the baby for hours. So they take the baby into the bank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then promptly forget the baby.
On top of the roof. Yeah. Never leave a man behind. Yeah. I just love how everyone falls in love with the baby. Such a good MacGuffin.
Well, he probably is the best baby. He is the best one.
Yeah, I think I got the best one.
Yeah. They're all terrific.
I mean,
yeah,
I know
this one's the best.
Doesn't matter. And I know this movie isn't, you're not supposed to think about like how logistically any of this works, but it
but
sounds
you're
like,
gonna bring up the point, and I love that.
But it's like the way they say it, it's like, so they've had these babies for a while because they're crawling, they're moving.
Oh, yeah, they're not like
that's not a newborn.
No,
they have teeth.
Yeah,
yeah.
How long does it take the fontanelle to close up?
By the time you got teeth, your fontanelles are getting pretty closed up.
Okay.
You probably don't have to mind that fontanelle too much.
Right. It's pronounced fentanyl.
You should mind your fentanyl.
Yeah. I mean, it probably takes a minute to get home. Like, she was walking around and stuff. If I just dumped out five kids, I probably wouldn't be walking so much.
Dumped Fair. Out five kids.
Well, I mean, at that point, what you do you are think kinda, you're
it's
doing?
A shoot.
Like,
yeah.
One and two is pushing, three kind of gets out, but four and five just sort of like,
woo. I've never thought of the logistics
it's
of like
slide.
Multiple babies, but I just thought of like a bunch of like umbilical cords hanging out, and I got a weird vision. I grossed myself out.
Do you think one comes out and then two through five just like firemen pulls down?
The fifth one definitely does.
Yeah, I assume people just squat out five.
I never like, thought
so
about
I assume
this.
It's one Wouldn't big so placenta, cool? right? So, and yeah, each one would have their own umbilical cord.
Ooh, that's like a four-course meal. That's so many placentas.
Is or this like a lot of trees? Identical twins versus
no, that's just the eggs, right? So identical twins are one egg that splits.
So you, is it always just one placenta? I don't know.
I don't know.
Let's ask our next guest about this.
I should ask my brother who has twins.
Yeah, I don't know. How many placentas per child?
I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that our next guest doesn't know anything about placentas, but we will check in.
Okay. So fraternal twins will have individual placentas. Identical twins may end up sharing a single placenta. Ooh.
This is getting dangerously close to our next podcast, PNS Talk.
Yeah. Us trying to learn about shit that we should know.
No, we don't try and learn about it. We just say it as if it's fact.
Oh, that's right.
Well,
man stuff.
We correctly instruct those who need instruction.
Jesus. Fuck you.
What? It's been a long time since we've talked about penis talk.
That's true.
I still identified as man when we did last time we did.
That's true. Yeah. Different times.
I can't wait to trans inclusionary subjugate you by mansplaining to you. Yeah, trans inclusionary sexism. It's what I have to look forward to in this life.
Oh, oh my God, I'm crying.
Quote, quote, favorite quote.
Quote, 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 quote.
What does he say when he cocks the shotgun? I think he just says, like, let's go get our baby or something like that.
Mm.
But it's just this perfectly framed scene. He goes, let's go get our baby. And then it smash cuts to something else. The delivery is where it's at.
Yeah.
Did you end up watching The Weatherman?
I didn't.
Mm, okay.
I thought about it and then I opted to watch this twice.
Yeah, I think that was the better choice.
Weatherman slaps.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
The last 15 at this point, to 20 seconds were great.
At this point, oh yeah, you know how it ends now. So it's ruined for you.
Yeah.
He becomes a weatherman.
He had a bow.
That's true.
Yeah, he becomes Hawkeye.
Jesus Christ.
But for weather. So he's like some weird storm Hawkeye combination. Just like
shooting arrows up into a cloud.
Swords yeah. at people.
Nice.
Swords? Yeah, he shoots swords out of his bow.
Why not? It's Hawkeye.
Hawkeye's okay. brother is swordman.
Come swords at me, man. Marvel.
What?
Yeah, he's like his brother is like a sword guy.
That's dumb. Oh,
God.
It was the.
Hawkeye is also the worst.
Hawkeye is the best.
Hawkeye's not the worst. Plastic Man's the worst.
That's a different universe.
You guys are going way too deep.
He still sucks.
Anything with a movie is what I'm talking here.
Batman's the worst.
Batman's fucking not great.
I think Batman is a great character that's been way overdone and like explored a little too far.
I think we need to like seriously sit down and have a talk about Spider-Man one of these days.
Like, fair. I was gonna say we need to do that with Wolverine, but you're not wrong.
Yeah, it's to the point where like the editors aren't even entertaining the thought of like Spider-Man ever getting back together with Mary Jane. I don't know. Also, I have not loved this whole jackpot shit with Mary Jane. There's a whole lot going on right now with Spider-Man that I'm not so sure about.
No.
Welcome to Two Spidey Sense, where we have Sean and Nick talking about.
Yeah, my Two Spidey Sense.
Yeah, my Two Spidey Sense.
Oh, that's
yeah.
really good.
Yeah.
What else do you want to kind of put on tape about watching this multiple times?
Well, the easy thing to say is I watched it 2 days in a row and did not like I enjoyed both.
Not even upset about it.
Yeah, really, for real. I'm not saying I would have done it, you know, if I wasn't coming to this, but, you know, it's not like Joe. Like,
yeah,
I don't think I watched that one a second time. But it's not even like. Oh, I don't know. Pick a fun Nick Cage movie. It's not like Spirit of
Leaving
Vengeance.
Las Vegas.
Never seen it.
You're in for a romp.
Yeah, I've heard. I'm also a listener, Nick.
Oh, shit. We got to do something about that.
We might have just done that.
Patreon.com/cancel.
All right, leave him out of the end instinct.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that keeps getting me is it's just a really amazing movie that happens to have Nicolas Cage in it. And he's really good in it, too. I don't know. If somebody's like, hey, pick a Nick Cage movie for me to watch, this is probably what I would pick for them.
It's one of the most high energy Nicolas Cage yeah. movies, for sure. If I was just competing on like energy levels alone, this is like top three, maybe with. Maybe only like Vampire's Kiss yeah. and
G-Force
boom, for boom, sure pow. Yeah, it's got that boom boom pow.
I always ask myself like whether this movie works without Nicolas Cage, and this whole cast is so perfect. Like there's mm-hmm. not a single wasted part. There's not a single person that I would take out of this film or think that anyone else could do a better job. So like in terms of that, definitely high mark for Nicolas Cage film.
Yeah, I think for me, both of these movies really benefit from having just fucking banger scripts, mm-hmm. like absolutely great writing. I think that this one Cage does such an excellent job with that script. Like what he brings to it is pretty unique. And I think that's what makes it stand out to me is like, yeah, you could put any other like late 80s dude into that role and they would be fine, but it wouldn't hit the same way.
Well, what I think works so well is his character is so nonchalant about everything. It's all very monotone.
Yeah, he's like he is high energy, but he's also sort of like one note. He's kind of reserved.
He's kind of the straight man for all the wacky shit. And it works so well. So yeah. The ultimate question does come down to, John, why does this movie need to go forward?
I already answered that.
Yeah, but we never actually asked you that.
Yeah, Peter, cut that in right now.
For the real part right now.
This is how you fix it in post.
Yeah.
Oh, I do want to bring up the, the set dressing.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. So, like, yeah, it's set in 87, but, like, most of the set dressing looks more like 75.
Yeah.
And it was just so perfect. I remember at one point they're sitting on their couch, and it's that goofy, like various shades of tan, pictures of barns and shit. And I'm like, oh my God, my grandparents had that when I was a kid. I'm talking like 95.
Yeah, the wallpaper choices, especially in their trailer, are stellar.
I mean, their starter home?
Yeah.
Right.
I do love the, I want to go back, the trailer fight always so kills good. Me. Just like close quarter, like combat between big people.
Oh, awesome. Someone's getting hilarious. Bounced into a ceiling.
Well, like ceilings or punching walls when you like just pull back. It's everything comical about a good like close quarter fight.
Have you ever punched a wall, like a sheetrock wall?
I have.
I have too. And it is not fun.
No, they hold up pretty well. they're good. It's weird that something that's like fire preventative for like 2 hours is so strong. You wouldn't expect it.
Fire can't go through doors. It's not a ghost.
So does kale and wool, Nick. And that's nice and light.
Kale?
Fluffy. Kale and.
Oh.
It is a superfood.
I'm going to start packing. Like,
thanks for being here, John.
I'm going all natural now. I'm just putting kale in my walls.
Yeah, there you go.
I thought you were saying I'm gonna start packing your stuff so you'll leave sooner.
You're projecting a little bit, Sean. Yeah.
I don't need to pack it. You've got a deck and a door right there. I can just help you out right now. Get out.
All right, last thoughts. Boom 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 pow.
No, it's still, it holds up. It's great. I love this movie every time I see it. I like it more every time I see it.
Yes,
good.
This movie makes me want to box a toddler. And I love it. Oh, man. It just gets me so excited. Like, I mean, everything, I don't know. Like, the energy is just so high. It's so comedic.
I don't know. Box a toddler?
Yeah, I'm getting to that part.
Okay.
And it just gets me amped up that, like, I want to put on those, like, comically large, like, inflatable boxing gloves and just knock over a four-year-old. Like, I don't know if it's an uppercut or if I hit him with, like, a hook, but.
Is that still a toddler at four?
I think you're just a kid.
Oh, I could go younger?
I would say two, three is toddler.
Sweet. Who's got a two-year-old I know?
Well, one of our friends has a three-year-old, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you're pushing it, but.
No, she's almost a kid. We'll see.
Oh, so she's ready to learn life's lessons.
Right.
Yeah, this movie just gets me amped up. I love just the energy and the inclusion of everything. Like, to have this kind of wacky-ass story about stealing a baby because somebody has too many babies. Beautiful.
Highly improbable.
Yeah, it's very improbable.
Kidnappings happen every day, John.
Name three.
Lindbergh.
That happened today?
We got one.
I got nothing else.
John Benet Ramsey. Nick, one more. One
that
more.
Wasn't a kidnapping. She got murdered by her parents. But
most kidnappings end in murder.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Yeah. For taken. Legal reasons.
Anyway,
Taken. There we go. That's three.
Yeah, and Steve.
That guy's really bad at just like knowing where his family is at any given time.
Yeah they keep getting taken. It's bad.
Yeah.
Final thoughts.
Good great for us. Bad for them.
Go ahead, John.
Well, I was just going to give you actual final thoughts because I felt bad for just saying yes earlier.
That's half of my participation.
What? Just yes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good.
You're the yes man.
Movie good.
Yeah. No, but for real, like it's a high quality movie. Y'all have said everything there is to be said about this movie.
Yeah, but we don't remember what we said, so it's new to us.
I also don't remember what you said. So.
All right, so it's new to you, too.
Well, it's not new to the listeners.
You're the listener.
Allegedly.
No,
it's why should this real movie go forward, John?
For real, it's a great movie. Nick Cage is amazing in it. It's really early in his career. It's before his Oscar, which I think is really fun. Yeah, I legit think this is Nick Cage's best movie, except for maybe Pig. But again, they're, you know,
very
polar opposites. Yeah. So,
well, thank you, John. Do you have anything you want to plug?
Nick's butt.
Nice.
Well, we'll get some drinks later.
Yeah. We do that. We don't.
Why do we have to
now
wait till later?
Well,
so that the bye bye goes there. I know this podcast guy.
Do you know how editing works?
I can do whatever I want, Sean.
Like, you can put in that time Nick said
multiple times.
He could, but he won't, because he knows what's good for him.
Adios.
And it's good to see you again. It's been a long
time. Yeah, it has. It's been a really long time
since you left Seattle. So,
yeah, it's been what, like 10 years, more than that, like 12 years, something like that.
I think I've been up here for 12, and oof. I don't think you and Liesl were here too much longer after I showed up.
Yeah, no, so about 12
most
years.
People
crazy.
Once I enter a city,
once you arrive, it creates an exit point.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a clear and easy out. They're just like, you know, things changed.
Yeah. I don't know. I just the vibe here is the same.
I am moving to Portland in a week.
Yeah, we get it.
Yeah, that's fine. Trust me, I put my stank on Portland already too, so you're not gonna like it either.
But you're not there now.
Just everywhere you go, you just leave a wake of Nick in your path.
Yeah,
you know, we've established that Nick is just the generic like shape of like just white guy. So I see Nick everywhere I go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am the best kind of white guy.
It's sort of an I am Spartacus situation where everyone just sort of stands up and is like, I'm Nick.
I'm Nick. Then there's Jick.
And then Jick.
Yeah.
Which still sounds like a slur.
It does.
This is the best kind of Nick.
How are things going up there?
It's wet.
Yep. Spider season.
Yep. Spider season.
Gotta love spider season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, things are going great. Stopped doing entertainment. I didn't have that kind of heart in it for myself anymore.
Fair.
And now I just make three times as much being an electrician.
I mean, it's hard to argue with that math.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that seems pretty good.
It's very reasonable. Like, it's okay that I went to college and I'll pay it off this way.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, our backstories really aren't that different.
No.
I make so much more money doing web development than I ever did as an illustrator.
Absolutely.
I feel like that's sort of the story of our entire generation. We went to school for something artistic, and then at some point we found out that we actually had to make money doing something else.
Yeah, Scott warned us like early on. He's like, hey guys, you're gonna be poor if you do this for a living. And it's like every year he'd start out like, hey, guys, here's my stump speech. Get ready to be poor. It's like,
oh, you're rich in spirit.
Yeah. Full of love and happiness.
Nope.
Yeah.
And alcohol.
If you're lucky, you'll have some high highs, but those low lows are guaranteed.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a nice segue into depression, which I think is a great theme of The Weatherman.
Agreed. Well done.
Yeah, I know.
We're basically like describing the early life of Dave Spritz here, right?
Dave Spritzel.
Dave Spritzel. And we have our special guest this week.
Hey, I'm Alec Wilson. Very nice to be on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
So you're our first, or this is your first time with us. Not to require a second time. We'll leave that open-ended. But...
this is my first time here.
To all of us.
My name's Alec Wilson. I went to school with Nick, for better or worse. I'm an actor. I spent several years going around the country doing theater various places before I landed in LA. Was there for about 10 years. Appeared in some small films and some small roles in TV shows. And now I'm here to pimp The Weatherman.
As it goes, the logical progression.
As it goes, it's like the career arc. Weatherman is a certain point in the career arc, and it's dead center for me.
You know, I actually did want to talk about that. I'm just going to talk about it now. There was like, I remember the Weatherman being that kind of peak of when like Nick Cage movies were advertised as kind of the thing to say. Like, I feel like that kind of quickly went downhill after this.
Yeah, it did. There was definitely like a pocket, and then it collapsed really rapidly.
So it's like right near the end of the window, because this came out, what, same year as Lord of War, which I think you guys already eliminated, right?
Oh, that movie sucks.
Oh, yeah, that sucks.
That was, okay, that and this were both kind of like that last year of just like Nick Cage movie, and this movie is great, and Lord of War, not.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yet, I think Lord of War got all of the advertising money between the two Nick Cage movies. Like, I remember ads for Lord of War, and that was, you know, 20 years ago. I still remember those ads.
Listen, Michael Caine don't come cheap.
Well, and I mean, Lord of War is getting another, it's getting a sequel, potentially.
Allegedly.
Which is, you know, like, it's insane. That movie is not that good. It's not that interesting. But
it'll be better than the first one.
Clout is to your point, you know.
Well, it won't have Leto in the second one, so that'll be better.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
But I think you're absolutely right. Like, there were two Nick Cage movies that year. One of them was good and went completely under everybody's radar, and the other one was pretty terrible, and his career was really in the process of falling off a cliff, like there or shortly thereafter.
Yeah, because as we've talked about, the next things up is Ant Bully, World Trade Center, Wicker Man, Ghost Rider 1, guesting on Grindhouse, then next.
What was Adaptation?
Adaptation was 2002.
And this Weatherman was?
2005.
Okay.
2005, yeah.
Ant Bully, I've only heard the title like once or twice, but I feel like that's a film I could really get into.
It's animated.
Like pushing around some Karens or something. Are we just getting violent at like a wine, like a sipping?
Exactly.
Sipping paint?
Sipping paint, yeah.
I had seen this movie shortly after it came out originally, and then hadn't seen it for 20 years until I watched it just a couple weeks ago. And then I watched it again a couple days later, just because I realized I had forgotten just how freaking fantastic this movie is. There are things like that tartar sauce stream of consciousness that, like, as soon as it started, I was like, oh, right. I remember just laughing my ass off watching this for the first time. It's so good.
Nothing in cinema ever beats Michael Caine dropping camel toe the first time.
The way he just won't stop saying it during that first scene.
I just rewatched this movie.
David, do you know what camel toe is?
Atrocious American dialect.
Oh, it's so bad. Just rewatching this right before like we started recording today, and just his final scene with his son and the great advice he gives him, which is sometimes you just have to chuck things.
In this shit life.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just chuck shit.
This is like my stump speech for this movie. One of the reasons I really, really love this movie is because it's like a perfect anti-typical Hollywood narrative movie. Because if you were to approach somebody with this script and say, listen, this is going to be the guy's last conversation with his dad, he's going to have words of wisdom to impart to him, what's this powerful message going to be? Sometimes you got to give up on shit, right? What Hollywood executive is going to go, yeah, check, we'll do that? No, they're going to say, oh, no, it needs to be something meaningful and aspirational and blah, 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 blah. And I think it takes like Gore Verbinski in the middle of making the Pirates franchise, which is making everybody in Hollywood like more money than they could possibly imagine, to get studio backing for this script. Like, it's just a perfect chain of events that this movie can even exist at all.
I do love those like weird little passion projects where, yeah, like Gore Verbinski's making all the money in the world and he's like, what do you want to do next? Like, I want to do this weird thing with Nicolas Cage being sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to like do a film about divorce and like midlife crises. Something that a lot of people will identify with. Well, at least three people I identify with in a good 20 years.
Yeah. I also watched this movie like shortly after it came out on DVD, and then didn't watch it again until this podcast. And I remember liking it, and I was excited when we got to it the first time. And I'm like, oh, good, this movie is good. My memory of this isn't wrong.
It's grown on me so many times now. It's like the first time I watched it, I was like, I like it, but I'm not like blown away by it. You know, the structure of our podcast means that like good movies go up against bad movies. They get whittled down. So I was like, it seems like a slam dunk moving forward kind of situation. The second time I watched it, I was like, I like it more. Third time, I'm like, this movie fucking rules. It's so good.
We just need to get you to watch Ghost Rider 5 more times and you'll love it.
I will never like Ghost Rider. That movie sucks shit. It can take its jelly beans right to fucking hell.
This movie is like one of those adult ice creams that you try the first time and you're just like, ugh, fucking pralines. And you're like, I don't need that shit. Give me something with Cocoa Puffs in it. And then like the next time, yeah, I was like, you know what? That's actually it's a fine pairing. It's okay. I like it. You know, it's a nice day. And pretty soon you're just like, fuck yeah, dude. Give me those fucking candied walnuts.
Yeah, boof those pralines right up my ass.
Yeah. Somebody shove a praline on my ass. I gotta get this Sunday started.
All I want is candied walnut and praline ice cream now. Where do I find that?
Well, I got one place that'll serve it. It's definitely soft serve. Oh,
that didn't take long.
That's the one.
That's it.
That's the joke that gets me.
That's okay. The one. Okay. You hit my limit.
Fuck yeah. All right.
You're out. You're finally free.
That's one more friend group out the window.
Yeah. One fewer social obligation.
Wait, I just had to make a bad poop joke. I didn't have to leave town.
That's it.
Looks like I'm moving to Portland.
No.
Ignore that big box in the corner.
That just says Nick on it.
Yeah. The one with the air holes.
This end up.
Definitely doesn't smell like farts and spiders.
So, Alec, from like a performance perspective, like as an actor, what do you think about the performances in there across the spectrum of the people in this movie, not just Nick Cage?
So let's set aside Michael Caine's dialect and just acknowledge that it's not great. If we can, let's just let that live in its own little world of why wasn't this character just English? It wouldn't have changed anything. But I think the performances in this movie are fantastic. Nick Cage, he's doing something he rarely does, which is like a very kind of subtle, grounded performance. It's incredibly naturalistic, everything he's doing. And he's very, very funny in it, but in a very dry way, which is not what you think of when you think a typical Nick Cage performance. You think, you know, like Vampire's Kiss or something, these huge over the top moments. And this movie, there's like none of that throughout this entire movie, maybe one or two moments. The rest of it is these little tiny looks. And I think that's one of the reasons it gets better on rewatching, because you pick up more of those little subtle moments that he's layering in.
One thing I noticed this time just about his acting, the scene that really stuck out to me is no dialogue whatsoever. It's when him and Shelley are, when he's buying her the clothes and she's like coming out with all the different outfits, and just his, like, it's all silent, just music over. And you just see Nick Cage just kind of hamming it up, and just great like body work and great like physical acting.
It's the most joy you see him experience while parenting the whole film.
It's true.
Maybe so, ever.
Yeah.
It's the only time you see her, Shelley, have like any joy in the entire movie, except for like a brief twinkle behind her eyes when she talks about bow hunting and killing small animals.
Oh, yeah. She's probably a serial killer.
Yeah.
So
sociopathy definitely on the spectrum for her.
I mean, that's a perfect transition, because Shelley is like maybe the most scene stealing kid in a movie. She's right up there. She's so good.
Yeah, we've aligned her. We have a good kid, bad kid, like toggle that we have in this pod. She's definitely a shitty child, but we love Shelley so much.
We stand a legend
for her shittiness. Like most shitty kids in the Nicolas Cage filmography suck, but Shelley's a shitty kid that we support.
There's Hand Pan, then every other kid.
Pretty much.
Hand Pan, Shelley, every other kid, but there's like a good break.
There's a big gap, yeah.
Where you say like, well, Hand Pan's a good kid,
And Shelley's a bad kid, but fucking awesome.
Yeah. The way she orders cigarettes and just like asks for a pack of like strikes. So cool. I love Shelley.
Yeah. She's the best.
Well, and like Nick Holt is just a young Nick Holt who I love his work now, and just to go back and just see that.
Yeah, like his acting is pretty bad, but he's a teenager. Yeah. You know, it's not the best of his career. And you can see like the starts of what he will be, but it's not his finest work.
No.
Although I do have to say, in defense of Nicholas Holt, like his performance, he's kind of like a sullen, mumbly teenager through most of it, but his American dialect is better than Michael Caine's.
Yes.
Very good point.
And he hasn't had nearly as much time in the craft to sharpen that one.
Michael Caine, this is true. I don't understand. Like, why would you ever bother with accent work? Like, just play who you fucking are.
You're Michael Caine.
Package.
let's get Michael Caine as a Southern gentleman. Like, no.
He was supposed to be like the great American author, and it's weird. It's kind of like the same, like the rumored reason why Constantine isn't British in the Keanu Reeves movies, because they're like, we need a big name, let's get Keanu Reeves, only to find out he can't do a British accent.
Do you think they asked Nicolas Cage to train up Michael Caine on a Boston accent?
This would be Boston time.
Yeah,
you're
this
right.
would be the height of the Nicolas Cage Boston accent. This is where it gets its best.
He's left Southern behind, full on Boston.
Just all Boston cop from here on out.
Why would you want anything else?
No, have you ever seen the 9/11 movie?
I haven't, actually. I haven't, no.
Well, it's got Michael Pena doing just an incredible job.
Yeah, he's very good.
Nicolas Cage does a Boston accent for a New York cop.
Is it just wonderful?
It's what I live for.
So actually, it brings up an interesting question, Alec. What is your relationship to Cage? You know, have you seen a billion of his movies? Have you seen 10?
I've seen a lot of them. I haven't seen all of them. I looked through the bracket. I think I've seen somewhere around like 2/3 of the movies on that list, I think.
Pretty good.
There's a decent number of the, especially the more obscure ones that I haven't seen, but I have seen a lot of them. And this is a tough week, because of the ones that I've seen, like this could be the final for me. Like these are two of my very favorite Nicolas Cage movies of all time, this and Raising Arizona, which it's tough for me to like try and get the edge on Raising Arizona, because I also love that movie. But you gotta love like The Rock, right, for its special little place. But in terms of just what is a great movie, it's this one for me. It's The Weatherman.
It is incredibly well acted. Like, I consider this an adult comedy. I mean, it's not like a like raunchy comedy. It's your like, I don't know, intellectual comedy. Like, does it fall in the same like world space as like Sideways, where like people want to feel good, or like what's that movie that Will Ferrell did, Stranger Than Fiction?
Oh, sure.
Sort of that kind of like world space of like,
yeah,
it's darker, but it's still funny. It's not just like,
and it touches humor, like real world, like things like depression and divorce. And
yeah,
it doesn't belittle or demean anything.
BJ's lacked enthusiasm.
the funny in this movie is like, it's just enough like of that really dark, dry humor to like make the bitter pill at the core of this movie go down, which is like another reason that like this is a movie that's going to fly under everybody's radar, because nobody wants to hear that like maybe you should just give up. Maybe what you need to do is delete the novel that's on your hard drive. Like, that's not an easy thing to hear, but it's an important thing to hear.
Well, I love just his inner monologue throughout this movie, and like his thinking, and just like how relatable that is to depressive states and like very real life inner monologues that I've had at times. But I just, the one that sticks out to me is when he's after got hit with the apple pie, and he's like, you know, right before he beats up the pedophile, talking about how it's like, you know, Thomas Edison didn't get pies thrown at him. It's like, then right before, he, like right when he gets up to the gate, he's just like, clowns get pies thrown at them. And there's that moment right when he's like, oh, he's about to realize something. Then he's like, nope, got to go beat someone up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That moment of realization. Then he beats the shit out of the guy. Then he picks right back up, walking back. Nobody ever threw a pie at Harriet Tubman. Bet you $1 million nobody ever threw a pie at Harriet Tubman.
No, his inner monologue, I think, is what really seals this movie for me in a lot of conversations. Yeah. Is it's just so, like, clearly, I mean, I identify with it. Because of like how often I go in and out of like something with myself, and it's, I don't know, it's relatable and it's stupid. You mentioned the tartar sauce scene. I can't tell you how many times that, like, my brain just wanders. It's not necessarily about like who or who does not enjoy eating pussy, but I mean, it's on record, we know, but I don't know, like, focusing is not my strongest suit. So when I see a scene like that, I'm like, yeah, okay, I get it. I understand.
I have to ask you, how many times during a given day does the random thought, I wish I had two dicks, just pop into your brain?
Okay, so recently I found a news article about a guy who may have died without ever knowing that he had three penises.
I just heard about this.
Yeah, it blew me away.
What?
Yeah.
What?
So apparently his testicles were extra penises, and he didn't, like, may not have known that there were extra dicks instead of balls in his ball sack. And this is only the second. So it is the second
Russian
recorded. It's happened again where some other guy had three penises. You know, I've gone back and forth on the two penis situation before.
The two penis problem.
Obviously. Yeah. The two penis problem.
Weighing the pros versus the cons.
Yeah. Clearly you want, like, top bottom stackers.
Yeah. You don't want side to side.
You don't want side stackers.
Sure. Which seems, no, that's to be, no good to anybody.
Yeah. It seems to be the way it often comes out. Yeah, is
claspers,
you've got
claspers are side by side.
Yeah. Clasper the friendly ghost.
Oh, shark dicks.
I'm going to get a Clasper the friendly ghost tattoo, and you can't stop me.
Is that going to be your cage match tattoo?
It's going to be my Peter tattoo.
No, don't do it.
Two dicks, never forget.
Yeah. Just New York skyline with just two penis silhouettes.
Nothing wrong with this. I support fully.
Rigidly.
Yeah.
Turgid.
Turgid. I love that word.
But yeah, so I'm all for multiple penises. I've definitely
putting it on the record.
Yeah, on a day-to-day basis, do I think about it? Maybe not, but I think it gets like a monthly
check-in.
Yeah, honorable mention. Like, there's got to be some time where I'm like, you know what would be really helpful right now? Sucking dick.
Just to have a spare, you know.
Sure. I mean, this one's busy.
Yeah, tap this one in.
This one could be doing other stuff.
Like taxes.
Yeah. All my dick taxes.
It's like, this one's really good at typing for some reason.
Boy, the government really takes their cut.
Oh, God. I don't even know how to get out of this.
You were talking earlier about, like, the internal monologue and about how it, like, really kind of, like, seals a lot of things. And all the way to the end of the film, I think one that really got me was, like, his acceptance during an internal monologue where he's, like, in the parade and he's like, oh, you know, I'm behind station 47,
right,
but I'm in front of SpongeBob.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And, you know, he found his place, and that's good. You know, he makes a dick ton of money, like two dick tons of money. And
yes,
yeah, 1.2 million in 2005 bucks is still,
that's solid money.
Yeah, man, that's good.
It's two dick money.
It's two dick money.
Two dick money.
That is absolutely two dick money. This brings up another point I wanted to make about this movie through the lens of being a Nicolas Cage movie. So I ran into an interview with Verbinski. It was actually. He was doing a junket tour, and it was specifically for The Weatherman. The interview was supposed to be for The Weatherman. They talked about The Weatherman for like the first third, and the rest of it was all questions about the Pirates movies.
Yeah. I mean, they're not going to ask him about The Mexican.
No, definitely not. But he said when he got the script, like, he loved the script, and then he, like, had some prior relationship with Nick Cage. and he sent the script to Nick Cage, and he came back and said, look, I really want to do this. Like, this is me. I don't have to act. This guy is me. And if you think about what was going on in Nick Cage's life and who he is, like, his dad's a lit professor. His uncle's Francis Ford Coppola. Talk about a father figure you can never live up to. He'd been divorced, I think, twice at this point. He's very financially successful, but probably feels like artistically he's not where he wished he was. Like, it all lines up for this being Nicolas Cage around age 40. And I think that's part of why his performance in this feels so effortless and so good, because he just steps into it and brings like his real life to it.
It's definitely kind of like just an old slipper or something. Like, he just kind of exists in this role. It just fits around him very wonderfully.
There is something about the performance that is like, yeah, so naturalistic and so real and raw, to where even like I think of Adaptation or Leaving Las Vegas, like the kind of big ones for him, but like where he's acting great, but it's, you know, acting as opposed to this, where it's just like, no, this just feels real in a way that I don't think most of his performances do.
Yeah, that's really well put. There are those little short snippets where he's like looking in the mirror and he puts on his like shit eating grin, and then it kind of falls just for a fraction. It's like, oh God, that feels so fucking real.
Yeah, it's beautiful. There's a moment like that with the fast food internal monologue thing. We just talk about people throwing, you know, it's always something they'd rather throw away than finish. And it gets down to the end of it, and there's this like pause that's just long enough, and then I am fast food. And it hits. It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah, you hurt for him a little bit at that moment.
Yeah, you got to think about like the Nicolas Cage filmography and him saying, I am fast food. And like thinking about Gore Verbinski, like coming to terms with like, he's forever going to be that dude who's famous for making movies based on a ride at Disneyland. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this is terrific. I love that identification between director and actor. The personal touch, I think, really comes through for both of them.
One of those rare situations where like the right script hits the right people at the right time and they have enough clout to actually get it greenlit. Yeah, it's one of those magic in a bottle movies, and flies under everybody's radar because it was never going to be commercially successful, which is why Lord of War got better billing than it. But, you know, whatever.
And so this is one of those films where, you know, when I ask, is this movie made better by Nick Cage? Like, no one else could have done this film and done it this well. I can think of.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's an important assessment.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really perfect casting.
Like, yeah.
At this point, that's ultimately what I'm looking for in these films, is like, how much of this does Nick Cage sell? And this whole movie works on him.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
In contrast, of course, to the other film, to Raising Arizona, if you ask the same question, I could say that, like, obviously Nicolas Cage makes the role, but the Coen brothers could have cast anybody.
Yeah.
And they could have made a fantastic film regardless.
Yeah. Right. And they really maybe wanted to after that movie.
Maybe
not enjoy him.
I can't imagine not enjoying him.
Not to get like too deep into the other movie, but I think you're absolutely right. Like, that movie rests on the strength of the Coen brothers' imagination, and like the strong, by far, I think the strongest performance in that movie is Holly Hunter. She's so ridiculously good. But bringing it back to this one, because we haven't talked about Hope Davis, speaking of female leads, and she's amazing in this movie as well.
Yes.
Also, still to this day, my all-time just Hollywood crush. I don't know. Even now, just I love Hope Davis.
Her getting hit with the snowball and just being like, the fuck, Dave?
Yes. Oh, it's so good. I think my favorite moment that she has in this is when they're in the restaurant after the like trust building thing, and he starts going off about it wasn't science fiction. One of the characters was a scientist, and the moment of realization she has that he immediately read the paper is so good.
Yeah.
Dave, fuck you.
Fuck you.
He is just a shitty partner, though.
There are so many moments in this movie where you just want to slap him upside the head, but that's like the biggest one. He immediately goes in the bathroom. And you're like, I know why you're doing it, but fuck, dude, pull it together.
Sorry, I love that he goes into the bathroom and pulls out the note, and then another guy walks in behind him. He's just like, oh, it's cool. Hey, what's up?
Yeah.
And then like don't reads worry. It. It's like, you piece of shit.
And then of course we have to mention the like, I hated you, that's why I lacked enthusiasm when your cock was in my mouth.
That's such a fucking brutal line. Yeah. And it's so accurate.
You brutal. Can't come back from that.
No.
No, no. There's no coming back.
I mean, that was especially rude because all he said was that they lacked enthusiasm, and she brings the hate when your cock's in my mouth game.
There was some definite escalation there.
Yeah. She's like, I don't know, man. It wasn't my favorite. Nope. I hate it.
Having poor Shelly, like opening the front door at exactly the wrong moment to hear that.
Shelly so just brutal. Seems to be in the background for some of the best like just parts. Like, Shelly, why are you here? It's because Shelly's too adult for her own good.
Yeah,
totally.
I love all the outfits, and they all have hats.
It's a very New York Minute kind of thing. Yeah,
she just looked like an extra from Blossom or something.
Totally.
I do love how this also this movie ends on such like, it's been such kind of a downer and very like, you know, just kind of. The whole thing is about acceptance, accepting your role and your lot in life. And we have that kind of more upbeat ending where he has like a moment of realization that, you know, people don't throw stuff at him anymore. And, you know, maybe it's because they respect him, but then he has that little beat, then a moment of realization, or maybe it's just because I carry a weapon with me now. Yeah. Maybe it's because I'm carrying a bow.
Do you guys have favorite scenes from this?
I love when he beats up the pedophile.
That's pretty good. I always kind of come back to when he's like at his father's living wake when he doesn't get to give his speech or whatever, and
like a rock.
Yeah, so he's just outside, or I may have this timeline wise backwards a little bit, but he's just outside like shooting his bow, and Russ is there, and fuck Russ, and then he's just gonna aim his bow at Russ, and then it's super threatening and very dark for everybody who's there.
That's right. Yes. After he found out that she's gonna marry Russ.
That's right.
Yeah, and before the speeches.
Yeah, everybody. Before the speech.
Yeah. One that we haven't talked about yet that I absolutely love is right after he comes back to the house after he finds out what's happened with his son. He comes back to the house and Russ is there. He just smacks him in the face with the glove. And it's one of my favorite lines in the movie is afterwards. Here's something. If you want your father to think you're not a silly fuck, don't slap a guy across the face with a glove. Because if you do that, that's what he'll think. Unless you're a nobleman or something in the 19th century, which I'm not.
I love that. I do. If I'm being serious, one of my favorite scenes is early on when he's like, when we first meet his dad, and his dad's like in the doctor's office and asks him to go get a newspaper. And then just the thing falls like he gave Shelley all his cash. He had a dollar and a quarter, like the thing closes too soon. So he tries to get change, can't get change. So he does all the things to like give his father what he wants. And it just doesn't kind of just a series of events happen. And when his dad comes out, he has the coffee that cost him 5 more cents than he thought. And his like, dad just like, where's the newspaper? It's like, oh, I couldn't afford it, but you could afford coffee. It's like, yes, it's like, you should carry more than a dollar. It's just like, oh,
It should carry more than a dollar, David.
It just like just all that stuff sucks so much, but it's such a great little microcosm of what the rest of this movie is going
to
be.
Him getting told 3 times that he needs to carry money because he's an adult is so good, but especially when Shelly tells him.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you need more than a dollar, Dad.
There was only a dollar, and you should carry more money. It's just the best lecture, especially now in a time when nobody carries money.
That was the weirdest thing the first time I watched this movie, being like living in a largely cashless society now. It's just like, oh yeah, money used to be a thing.
Money.
Yeah.
Can I get change? Having
no. Change, getting change for things. Yeah, that used to be a thing.
And that guy, that fucking kid at the Arby's, who was just like, 72 cents plus the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, you little fuck, you don't get to charge me 8 cents for fucking nothing. You work at Arby's.
Can I get change? Not really.
What a piece of shit.
The bookends on the movie of the guys asking for his autograph. The first guy in the DMV and the last guy. And this is something that really hit me on my second watch through this time is, you know, he comes out of the DMV scene saying, oh, people, you know, ask for my, sometimes people recognize me, sometimes they're assholes. But like, the dude wasn't being an asshole until he started being an asshole in that scene. And it's, and down at the end of it, the exact same thing. All he does is ask for his autograph, and he has a perfectly nice interaction with this dude. And it's such a perfect little bookend of, like, he starts the movie as the kind of guy who creates his own misery. And by the end of the movie, he's figured out how to not do that. And it's such a powerful little bookend there. I love it.
Two dick money will do that to you.
True enough.
Yeah, that's some serious growth. Two dick growth.
Two dick money buys a lot of growth.
Yep. Hey, two dick money's hard to come by. So
fuck.
I got hard and cum in that sentence.
I know, that's, I'm impressed. Like, I'm kind of mad that I didn't do that.
Yeah, this, I fucking love this movie. It's so well written.
So
it's a ride.
The real question now, why does this film deserve to go forward in the bracket?
Particularly knowing what it's up against.
Yeah, like I said, this is a tough one because, like, when Nick originally contacted me about this, he was like, oh, here's the movies that are still available. We need somebody to talk about it. I was like, Weatherman, done. And I was thinking about it later. I was like kind of comparing it in my brain. And I was like, okay, Weatherman against this, against this, against this. All right, as long as it's not up against Raising Arizona, I think it'll be a cakewalk. And now it's up against Raising Arizona. So this is tough for me. But I will say this. I think that The Weatherman is a very, very expertly made movie. It's got a lot of very skilled craftsmen behind it who are like at the peak of their careers or have been veterans in their career. Raising Arizona, while it has just balls to the wall imagination, the Coens, I think, are still kind of finding their voice and finding their style. It's not quite as assured when you get down to the nitty gritty of the filmmaking. One of the things that really popped this out for me was in The Weatherman when they do there's a flashback. It's right after the tartar sauce is the beginning of the flashback. And then they jump like halfway forward to a conversation with his dad where he's telling him he's going to leave and then back to the present. And it feels completely seamless. But if you sit down and try and figure out how to do that, it's not an easy thing to do, but they do it with the editing and the way they do the sound editing around it. It's great. It's brilliantly done. It's those small things that you don't notice unless you're looking for them. And Raising Arizona doesn't have much of that. It's a much lower budget film for one, which I'm not saying to be against it. They just didn't have the same kind of resources. And it's a very guerrilla style film, which limits the amount of things they can do with it. And I think because Weatherman had more resources and because the people making it had more just experience under their belt, they were able to make a much more polished finished product.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Well put. Yes, exactly. Just give the Nick yes at the end.
Yeah. Sold.
There have been far fewer edibles involved in today's recording, sure, yeah. So it's, I can give you more than just yes. Yes, please.
But yeah, that and I mean what we were talking about earlier with if you're looking at this through the lens of what is the best Nick Cage movie, the fact that this was such like a pinpoint accurate movie for him at this time in his life is, I think through that lens, this one's got to take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
we're going to get into all of that here. And we're going to get all into all that here shortly. Just
I can't tell you you're right or wrong. I still need to go have a two dick moment in the bathroom before I fully realize what's going on.
fully realize. Mm-hmm.
Case closed, Your Honor. The prosecution rests.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, Sean, why don't you have one of those mirrors that I could like open up in like a trifecta that makes it look like I have three dicks when I look at my reflection?
That's a failing.
Yeah, you need to.
That's a moral failing.
Your new place better have that. I want three dick energy.
Do you really want the hollow illusion of the three dick energy, though? I mean, that's just going to let you down when you try and put it into practice.
I'll just take like concept photos so that when I get
what has
Human Centipede 4 started up, once I get my script down for that.
You put it in the pitch deck?
Yeah, exactly. It'll be three dick energy, like the last person in the chain. It's like, yeah, you're the last person in the chain, but I'm going to give you three dicks and I'm going to ask myself. So that nobody else has to go through that. I think I'm really locking down what makes this film really good for me.
Absolutely.
So moving forward, we know Human Centipede 4. Mm-hmm. 4 for forward. Always ahead. And then maybe Raising Arizona. Maybe The Weatherman.
Hmm. We'll find out.
Yeah.
There you go.
I can't wait to get Nicolas Cage in Human Centipede 4.
As everybody.
As every man.
I mean, he doesn't say no to a lot, I gotta say.
Well, he's getting choosy with his roles. He's gonna take powerful ones that give him the opportunity to really express himself like he's never been able
Spider-Man.
To. Spider-Man. Like Spider-Man and Human Centipede 4.
Yeah. And Nick. Human Centipede 4, yeah. Yeah.
So just right. Bug movies.
Yeah. All right, Alec, thank you for being here. Do you have anything that you would like to plug?
Hey, thanks for having me. No, I got nothing to plug right now. Just keep listening to this podcast. I will be, because I want to be there when Weatherman emerges victorious as the ultimate Nicolas Cage movie.
I think you're the first person to ever plug our podcast on our podcast.
We don't even do that.
Yeah, I know. This is rough.
Hey, I just work on that level, man.
Hey, so for anybody who made it to the end of this episode, definitely keep listening to us.
Also, like and subscribe.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I think those are things
people say. Oh, we haven't told people to drop down in the basement for the comments section lately.
That's true. So we can get there later in our next section.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. It's a blast.
Well, fuck. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
That was two terrific conversations.
And one terrific guest.
Hey, we'll let you decide. I'm here every week. What are you talking about?
We'll let the listeners decide.
Right.
Going into this week, I was prepping to watch Red Rock West and National Treasure because my life's been crazy and I forgot we switched things up.
It was on the schedule. You are correct.
To be fair, your week got a whole lot better watching these two films.
Yes. I was fully ready to come in and just be like, Red Rock West slaps.
I mean,
really
it does.
Looking forward to watching it. And Peter's like, we're not watching that. I'm like, what?
And so this morning you woke up and mainlined two Nicolas Cage films.
Yeah.
Here we go. Call up Cocaine Carl.
If there was shout out Cocaine Carl. What's up, dog? Best in the West. I'm working on my sponsorship.
I like it. Yeah, that's good.
Is Cocaine Carl paying us for this?
Probably.
All right.
Cocaine Carl doesn't fucking know my name. That's how little this is going to get us. I've been so just happy these last like 2 weeks, just being like, I'm going to watch fucking Weatherman and then I'm going to watch Raising Arizona. And
I went the other way with it.
Well, yeah, I did it the other way too. Josie was just like, oh, what do you want to do like tonight? I was like, oh, how about we watch a movie? She's like, what movies are we watching? It's like, we only got good ones left.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we're at that point now where really I'm so excited to rewatch every movie. Except one movie I do love, but I'm like, I can tell you what beat for beat at this point.
Con Air?
That plot doesn't matter.
8mm?
We're done with 8mm.
Is that how we say it? That's how it's pronounced, right?
Yeah.
I've only read it. 8mm. This is America. I don't need to know how to millimeter.
No, National Treasure. I'm just like, I love this movie, but it just I love individual scenes more than I love the movie at this point.
It never deserved to beat Primal.
It always deserved to beat Primal.
Have you watched Primal recently?
No.
Because I'll tell you, it's great.
I'm gonna get down. So I'm gonna get down to Portland. I'll have nothing to do and like nothing like unpatched. I'll just put on Primal and I'll just get like sucked in.
You're like, oh my god, this is incredible.
I can never let Nick know.
I do think that once we finish the bracket, the first thing that we need to do is a doubleheader, but of Primal and Adaptation.
The Primal Adaptation head to head.
Yeah. I think it's the only thing. I mean, we've talked about those two movies being eliminated more than any other movie.
And one of them deserves to be here now.
Primal.
Boom. First episode.
All right. Fuck it. We're not reviewing these movies. Come back next week for that shit. We're going to talk about the Adaptation of Primal.
Yeah. We're going to release all this audio with no resolution. And we're only going to come back and talk about Primal and ignore this ever happened.
Beautiful.
Great White Jack. He named the parrot Edison.
I know. I love it.
Oh, man.
What are we doing here again, Peter?
We're trying to make a decision here. I don't know.
We're putting off the inevitable.
I don't want to put either one of these movies out to pasture.
It's a tough one, actually. Like, going into this, I was really feeling like Raising Arizona was just a complete slam dunk. So funny. The writing's incredible. Talking to Alec, though, I'm like, man, Weatherman is really good.
Yeah, Alec made some real intelligent conversation, something we don't get around here very often. No. And we actually, like, generally discourage.
Yeah.
Like,
big words that aren't on this podcast.
Yeah. I am glad that we had a good two, even three penis discussion with Alec. That's a plus. All those penises add weight to his argument. Penis weight. It's not much, but it's an ounce here and there.
I think the biggest argument I have for Adaptation at this point is the Weatherman. Sorry. The biggest argument I have for Weatherman at this point is the fact that, like, in terms of just acting and just the movie being made by Nicolas Cage and like just a Nicolas Cage vehicle, Adaptation. God damn it. Weatherman. There's a time in my, I watched these both these movies at the same time, like in my life when I was younger. So I just, it's,
yeah, I mean, they came out at around the same time.
Weatherman. So. But like Raising Arizona, great Coen Brothers film, great ensemble film. Everyone in that movie is perfect. But as we talked about, Nicolas Cage is kind of the straight man for that. Whereas Weatherman. Weatherman is a Nicolas Cage movie that really works because of him.
Yeah, it highlights his skills as an actor, as well as just his intuition. And, you know, he's in damn near every scene. It's his film.
It is an interesting juxtaposition to watch Raising Arizona with The Weatherman.
You mean Primal?
Stop it. My brain is already teetering on usable.
Perfect.
Okay. Yes. Raising Arizona, please. Go
but
on.
It's just like, it's so interesting to see like that very young, raw, like just
young and raw. Go ahead.
Performance. And that's very silly and not really, and as opposed to like this very deep, complicated, real performance.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those films that I'm always going. It's always going to exist up in my brain as top tier Nicolas Cage film. There's a reason it's made it this far. It's a terrific movie. Everything about it, writing, acting, nailed it. To pitch Raising Arizona, there's nothing else like it.
No. So I guess the question really comes down to, I would say Raising Arizona is the better, more fun film. I would say Weatherman is the better Nicolas Cage film.
Yeah. I might say that if I was going to pitch these to somebody, I would, like, if somebody wasn't familiar with Nicolas Cage, I would be like, hey, watch Raising Arizona. When you understand Nicolas Cage's filmography, watch Weatherman.
Okay. That's an interesting take on this. Cause yeah, I would not suggest Weatherman for someone who wasn't really that invested in Nick Cage.
Yeah, it wouldn't hold if you weren't as familiar with the Cageverse, but it is a terrific film. Yeah. I mean, they're both terrific films. And, you know, we've said a lot about Nicolas Cage's, you know, he is the man for The Weatherman. Yeah.
He is The Weatherman.
He is The Weatherman.
He says so at the end of the movie.
Spoilers. But with a film like Raising Arizona, it's just so much of like unique performance wildness.
No, I think you've convinced me on that. Like, when recommending a Nicolas Cage film to someone who isn't familiar with Nicolas Cage, yeah, I wouldn't suggest Weatherman over Raising Arizona. So by that logic, I would say Raising Arizona should go forward in terms of like a Nick Cage film.
Yeah. I think my vote is, as much as I love Weatherman, for Raising Arizona. Oh, fucking nailed it, dude.
All right, next. So.
Nice. Oh man, thank you all for listening. We are on social media at cage_match_pod. We are also on Patreon at Cage Match Pod. Thank you to our Sparkle Buddies, Josh, Sean, Josie, Rico, Matt, Adam, and Bill, and to our cage dancers, Ira, Freeman, Lance, Nathan, and Cameron.
Did you leave out?
And
maybe.
I don't know.
You did say
I'll find out.
Leave them out.
Yeah. I'll find out if I
if we weren't clear, Raising Arizona.
Yes. No, I thought that was clear.
Yeah, it was, okay. it was clear. Okay. Yeah.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Doesn't sound like Adam.
No, it really doesn't. Yeah.
This was early in the times. Yeah.
He knew you were a safe.
Yeah,
safe
I'm a safe.
My first, my earliest like Adam memory is when there were only five of us allowed on the patio during COVID times. Mm. And Adam was asking what everyone's favorite candy bar was, and I said Three Musketeer, and he got livid.
Like, he started
because it's a bad candy
He started
bar.
Screaming. Yeah, correct. I like nougat, and I don't need caramel to like zhuzh it up. That's all a Milky Way is.
Yeah, they're also bad.
I just like nougat.